Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Mayflowers are in bloom, and it's time to talk gardening with Julie Hoffman from East River Nursery and with you. We'd like to hear your questions about what's turning up in your little plot of land or even on your windowsill. What's thriving? What's not going the way you'd like it to? Ask Julie your questions now or tell us how your growing season is flourishing. You can give us a call at 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. You can text us 956-7372. That's 956-SDPB. Or you can email me in the moment at sdpb.org. Julie Hoffman, welcome to the program.
Hey. Good to be back, Lori.
How are you doing today?
We're just like ants on an anthill here today. We're running around. The sun is shining, and everybody thinks that maybe we can get out and get in the garden and start planting again, although last night here we were down, I think, to 34 degrees.
So oh, my.
Mother Nature isn't through with us yet.
I have a tiny baby bunny in my backyard, just the size of a teacup, and now the grass is taller than him. So you look out there and you see his little ears. We had the rain. We can't get out there to mow necessarily, so now everyone's going to get after it.
That's right.
I'll watch out for the baby bunny when I mow. What are the questions people are bringing in to you now? What are you hearing a lot of?
Oh, gosh, we are seeing vegetable garden questions, a lot of that, because of this cool weather. And a lot of our vegetables like it hot. They like it warm, and they don't like all that rain and wind. Tomatoes especially, cucumbers, green beans, all of those warm weather crops. We're seeing some damage on leaves, spotting, yellowing leaves. They're drooping, they're curling. They're just doing all sorts of things. And basically what we have to tell people is that they are warm weather plants. You know, they need some sunshine is what they need. So a lot of them, though, unfortunately, if they were out really early and they've gone through two or three bouts of really cold weather, they may not recover. They may just kind of sit there. You know, the neighbor down the road that planted theirs 2 weeks later than you did, theirs will start growing and take off, and yours will still be sitting there, and you're going, wonder why. I planted them early. Why aren't they going? And basically what it is that their root systems have been compromised with the cool weather. They're not drawing in the nutrients and moisture that they need. They're gonna be yellowy, not healthy looking. In some cases, they may need to be replaced, which is a sad thing, but that's kind of what happens when we get the urge really early.
So when do you know
get cold weather?
When do you know when to replace? I mean, is there waiting too long to start again?
Well, you want to maybe look at them and see, you know, evaluate. And, you know, if more than, I would say, 50% or, you know, somewhere in that range, or 75% of the leaves are really yellow or have brown blotches on them, that might be a sign that you want to try to replace them. You can also look for new growth, because what they'll do, if they're still vigorous, they'll start shooting out new leaves. You know, within a week of getting some good sunshine, you should be able to see some new growth. If they're still sitting there after a week, I'd say maybe it's time to look at replacing a few of them at least, so you have something coming along.
All right, we want to hear from you. You can ask Julie your question live on In the Moment right now if you call 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. You can send me a text, 605-956-SDPB, or an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. Here's an email question, Julie. If you grow sunflowers from hybrid seeds, will the seeds from the sunflowers do well if you plant them the following season?
Not always. You're going to have a number of different kinds of flowers, and you may not even get the same thing that you started with. Hybrids, you know, have been probably tissue cultured or something like that, where they're taking that tissue and keeping them true to form. So a lot of those things do not come true to seed. It's like planting seeds from an apple tree. You know, you have your favorite apple tree, like Johnny Appleseed did, and you take the seeds out of an apple. Not necessarily going to be that same kind of tree. The tree may not even have any fruit. So it's kind of a chance. You know, you're rolling the dice if you're trying to do that.
All right, so why?
It's because of the pollination, hybridization process, you know, where there are a lot of things, even like, you know, we have watermelons that are seedless. Well, right. How do you get another watermelon if they don't have the seeds in them? And they go through processing, you know, tissue culture, and there are a few seeds in seedless watermelon, and that's why when we're planting them in the garden or in the greenhouse, you know, they're very expensive seed. You usually pay more for those plants if they are indeed seedless because it's difficult to propagate those. So it's all in that propagation process. And unfortunately, sometimes, too, because of copyrights and things like that, we aren't supposed to be planting those seeds or harvesting those seeds from the hybrids. Depends on how the copyrights are written or when they expire. But on a lot of those things, we're not supposed to be doing that. So
I didn't know a seed could be copyrighted.
Yeah, well, it's with royalties and the types of seeds, especially seeds and more even the cuttings. You know, like you have a geranium, mm-hmm. and it's one of the hybrid geraniums, one of the new varieties, whatever it might be. And if they have, rights to that plant rights, then or a royalty on it, if we're paying a royalty, then there's so many years that we can't propagate. We can't actually take cuttings in the greenhouse and sell them. Same thing for, you know, a private person. If you're taking them and taking cuttings and then taking them, say, to farmer's market or something like that, growing them, technically you're not supposed to be doing that.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Here is another email question from a listener. I am preparing to remove a 5-year-old Blaze Autumn maple from the yard. Okay. Am I better off digging out the stump, or would a product that decays the stump over time suffice?
5 years. Well, I guess if they're not planning to put anything back in the hole, you know, they could use the stump remover. But technically, if you're thinking of planting another tree, then a 5-year-old autumn blaze probably doesn't have that large a root system yet. It probably would be better to dig the whole thing out.
You mentioned watermelon, and I know in my backyard I planted watermelon 1 year and had just the best experience, and then never was able to replicate it again. Is watermelon a hard thing to grow with the amount of, you know, weather variation that we have?
It is sometimes difficult, and then soil plays a big part of that. In heavier soils, they don't seem to do well. Right down in this area of the state, we have all the melon growers. If you've come up to the South Dakota State Fair along Highway 37 and Highway 34 down in the Woonsocket-Letcher area, they have very sandy soil, and the watermelons love that. They grow like crazy if they have moisture, but again, they're moisture lovers too, and last year was a very dry year. They had a little bit harder time getting going. And also, when we have hot, dry season, pollination is difficult for some of our vine crops. If temperatures get above 65 or 70 at night, where they stay really warm at night, pollination doesn't happen. So we have trouble getting the fruit set on the plants, too. Same for cucumbers, squash, and those sorts of things. You know, people say, I get lots of blossoms, but nothing is coming on the plant. Right. That would probably indicate a temperature problem. If the plants are otherwise healthy and green and growing, that would indicate a pollination problem.
Where's an easy place to start if you want to start gardening? As we talk about stuff, often we talk about the problems that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, give folks a thing to start out with that they can feel a little successful.
I guess it depends. If you're thinking of just an ornamental type of thing, you know, a small pot of flowers on your deck or patio or windowsill, something outdoors, something easy to get you started. If you're thinking vegetables, there are a lot of plants that we have in the greenhouse that do really well in pots. If you're not, you know, don't have the land or aren't inclined to dig up the front lawn, you can do things in pots. Some great bush tomatoes that stay very stalky, that would be wonderful in pots. There's a beautiful, it's called red dwarf or red skin pepper that gets the mini peppers like you buy in the store where, you know, you buy the bag with all the different colors in it. The red skin dwarf goes from green to red, and I think one of the plants we had last year had over 40 peppers on it at one time. Mm. And in the container, it probably was about 2 feet tall, very bushy and stocky, pretty easy to grow. So there's a lot of vegetables that, you know, if you want to know where your food comes from and you want to try your hand at that, those are pretty easy to start with.
You can talk to Julie Hoffman now live on the air on In the Moment. Call 800-524-3604. You can ask her your question or even tell her your success story. Email inthemoment@sdpb.org or send us a text, 956-SDPB. The call-in number again, 800-524-3604. 4. Julie, here's an email question. Is there a shrub native to the Black Hills that you're aware of that makes a good natural fence?
Something native. You know, out there, a lot of the natives are considered weeds. So, I'm not sure what you might want to do out there. There's some of the, I'm kind of stuck there because a lot of that native stuff is what I would not consider a more hedge-type material. Mm-hmm. You could try, not native, but you could try some privets or probably even some chokecherry. Those make really great. Those are native out there. So chokecherry or even get the, if you want to do straight native, you can get the green chokecherry. But there also is the Schubert chokecherry, which has the green leaves starting out in the spring and then it turns purple, has the best chokecherries you ever did taste. And my husband, we have some in our yard. He fights off the birds every year to get the chokecherry so we can make syrup and jelly and all of those good things.
How do you fight off the birds?
He's out there with a stick. I don't know how he does that, but he monitors them very closely. Mm-hmm. We have quite a few of them, so I guess he does share with the birds. I mean, there's nothing he can do to keep them out of there, but the only drawback with chokecherry is we do sometimes get some disease problems with it. There's a disease called black knot that sometimes can infest the chokecherry, so you have to do a little pruning on them. Nothing you can spray on them for that. I'm trying to think of what else we would have out there that would be good. There's, pea shrub, some of those things that soil conservation might offer, or we offer also. And I guess, too, does the question have how big they want them to get or what size, if they're using them for screening? Or
It does not have the details. If you're still listening, let us know, and we'll follow up with that question.
Sure.
Julie, a text message from a listener who says tons of squash last year on their farm near Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. So some years good for squash, some places good for squash?
Some places are more, and it just, again, depends on, I know down south there, they had more moisture than we did. That last year we were very dry here, and I know the southern folks down Woonsocket, Mount Vernon, for us, they had pretty good moisture last summer. So it's all a matter of rain timing, and then how they're growing them, as far as fertilization, that sort of thing. So there are better years than others. Vine crops take a lot of moisture. So you're going to have to, be right on top. If you do go through a dry spell, you're going to have to make sure you're supplementing with good watering practices.
All right. What's the best way to revitalize areas on your lawn where dog urine has killed the grass? You've got the spots.
Yep. you can first of all, scratch out all those dead areas. You can apply a little lime in those areas to neutralize that urine area, and then you can overseed with some grass seed. There are some of the grass seeds that are a little more salt tolerant, sometimes, but usually if you do the little lime and you have to make sure, though, with grass seed, I see this all too often, people are just throwing the seed out over the top of the existing lawn, and if it's laying on top of a kind of a dry, you've got a lot of thatch or area, it's not going to germinate. It needs to be in contact with the soil, so you have to get rid of that old thatch, you have to get the seed down in contact with the soil, even putting an application of a little bit of a mulch over the top, like some peat moss or a little thin layer of black soil to help get that germination going on it.
Couple more minutes to talk to Julie if you're still interested. 800-524-3604. Julie, how come that happens in some people's lawns who have dogs and not in others who have dogs?
It depends on what you're feeding your dog.
Okay.
There are dog foods out there that will lessen the acidity, help with that type of thing. You can ask your vet or local pet store or whatever. But it just depends on food, water, and then also the health of your lawn and the type of grass that you have in your lawn too. So there's a lot of factors that can play a part in that too.
Can you have a beautiful lawn and a beautiful dog at the same time, or is it pretty much a trade-off? If you're a dog lover, you're just gonna allow for a little
trade-off. Yep. The people that I have seen have the best results probably have their dogs trained to use a certain area in the yard. So, you know, that, you know, they just go back and they've got a corner back in the yard that they just know that they're not going to have
that's
great
the
grass.
Spot. Yeah.
And you know, the dog uses that. And there are ways of training dogs to do that. So that I guess, would be your best method, training methods to kind of keep them in one general area.
Here's another email question from a listener. My lawn is in rough shape. It's patchy. It has a fair amount of crabgrass in it. What's the best way to get that back to looking like a normal lawn outside of resodding it?
I guess it depends on how much, you know, when it says it's patchy. If it's more than, I would say, 50 to 60% patchy, or it has bare spots, you might want to consider just tilling it up and reseeding. In fall is a great time to do that reseeding. Usually we have more moisture, cooler temperatures. If you have a sprinkler system, it can be done any time of the year. We've done some great lawns, you know, in July and August, but the folks have a sprinkler irrigation system to help keep the water on it during the summertime. If it's just those patchy areas, again, where we talked about the dog spots earlier, you know, raking those out, you know, making sure you're in contact with the soil, getting, you know, roughing it up with a rake or getting it rough a little bit, and then applying your grass seed and a little bit of a cover on it, you could probably get some of those patches to go. Now, the other thing, it's hard with patches in the yard because of watering. You know, if you've got one little here and then, you know, 40 feet away you've got another patch or whatever, you know, that once that grass seed comes up, it has to be watered 2 or 3 times a day to keep the soil moist until we get some age on those grass seedlings. If they dry out once, you're done for. You might as well start over again. They cannot dry out. So that's kind of a secret, too, is that watering.
Is there a secret to watering 2 or 3 times a day when you have
usually
a job?
Have,
I mean, other times?
It's tough. If the patches, that's what I said, you know, the patches are far apart. Mm-hmm. But if you've got it in one general area, you can set up a sprinkler. And we actually have hose timers where you can put them on your hoses and you can set them so that your sprinkler goes off if you're at work or, you know, can't get home to turn the hose on. And you don't have to have it on for long, 5 or 10 minutes, you know, just enough to keep it moist and keep those grass seedlings going.
How about that crabgrass? He said, or she said, there's
crabgrass,
a fair amount of crabgrass living
crabgrass
in that yard.
Crabgrass is an annual grass, which means anything that greens up this year isn't going to be there next year. The problem with crabgrass is that once they start setting seed, and that's the key, you don't want them to set seed, literally millions of seeds that will be coming up the next season. So for this year, if the crabgrass is already up, you can put on a post-emergent type of thing if the grass is young enough. If it's coarse already, which it shouldn't be, that it just should be starting to come up. The lilacs just bloomed here a couple weeks ago, and that's your key in the spring to know when the crabgrass is going to germinate is when the lilacs start to bloom purple. So, you know, you can put on a post-emergent, but they have to be young. You can get sprays for that. Otherwise, in the spring, you can put on the pre-emergence before it comes up, and that will control a lot of it. Now, having said that, if you are seeding your lawn, you have to be careful with most of the types of pre-emergence for crabgrass because they will also keep your grass seed from coming up if you've newly seeded your lawn. So there are special crabgrass controls that you can put on for a newly seeded lawn. So just make sure you get that type of product if you're reseeding and you want to control crabgrass.
Julie Hoffman, that's our time for today. I want to say thank you so much for being here with us. We'll see you next time.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.